Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 6, entitled The Downfall of Subarimuni, Text 41 and 42. Savichincha priyam strenam,
Savichincha priyam strenam,
Jarato hamasammata,
Jarato hamasammata,
Badipalita ejatka,
Badipalita ejatka,
Ichaham prachudarita.
Ichaham prachudarita.
Translation: Subarimuni thought, I am now feeble because of old age. My hair has become grey, my skin is slack, and my head always trembles. Besides, I'm a yogi, therefore women do not like me. Since the king has thus rejected me, I shall reform my body in such a way as to be desirable even to celestial women. What to speak of the daughters of worldly kings? No purport. Text 43. Muni pravesita ksetra kanyan tapuram riddhima pritasaraja kanyabir ekam pancha satavaraha. Thereafter, when Subarimuni became quite a young and beautiful person, the messenger of the palace took him inside the residential quarters of the princesses, which were extremely opulent. All 50 princesses then accepted him as their husband, although he was only one man. Tasam kali rabut buyams tadarte puya suridam amanurupunayamva iti tadgata chitasam. Thereafter, the princesses, being attracted by Subarimuni, gave up their sisterly relationship and quarreled among themselves, each one of them contending, this man is just suitable for me and not for you. In this way, there ensued a great disagreement. No purport. Text 45 and 46. Because Subarimuni was expert in chanting mantras perfectly, his severe austerities resulted in an opulent home with garments, ornaments, properly dressed and decorated maidservants and manservants, and varieties of parks with clear lakes, clear water lakes and gardens. In the gardens, fragrant with varieties of flowers, birds chirped, and bees hummed, surrounded by professional singers. Subarimuni's home was amply provided with valuable bands, seats, ornaments, and arrangement for bathing, and there were varieties of sandalwood creams, flower garlands, and palatable dishes. Thus surrounded by opulent paraphernalia, the Muni engaged in family affairs with his numerous wives. Purport. Subari Rishi was a great yogi. Yogic perfection. Subarimuni was a great yogi. Yogic perfection makes available 8 material opulences: anima, lagima, mahima, prapti, prakamya, isitva, vasitva, and kamasaya, kama vasaita. Subarimuni exhibited super excellence in material enjoyment by dint of his yogic perfection. The word bhavaricha means expert in chanting mantras. As material opulence can be achieved by ordinary material gains, it can also be achieved by subtle means through mantras. By chanting mantras, Subarimuni arranged for material opulence, but this was not perfection in life, as will be seen. Subarimuni became very dissatisfied with material opulence and thus left everything and re-entered the forest in the Vanaprastha order and achieved final success. Those are not admatattvavit, who do not know the spiritual value of life, can be satisfied with external material opulences, but those who are atmatattvavit are not inspired by material opulence. This is the instruction we can derive from the life and activities of Subarimuni. So Subarimuni was a great and powerful yogi. Subarimuni was obviously living in another era, in another yuga, and therefore he was able to perform austerities underwater. And for a very long time, he was seated in meditation underwater. Exactly what the object of his meditation was is not described. But surely it wasn't on a light, pure devotional service to Krishna. Because he maintained Anya Abhilas, he maintained other desire. And because he maintained other desire, these desires remained within the seed form, within his heart. And then at the slightest provocation, by seeing two fish engaged in sexual activities, as fish may do, not the most exciting variety from the human point of view, right? But nonetheless, it was enough to again awaken that desire in his heart, and again he desired strongly to engage in sexual activity. Earlier, we see that Subari Muni was seated under Yamuna for a very, very long time. And Subari Muni had, although he performed many austerities, he was not deeply absorbed in meditational transcendence. And he had perceived the environment around him, and he had become somewhat attached to that particular place. On one occasion, Garuda came there, and Garuda is of course the bird carrier of the Lord, and Garuda, as a bird, is not required to be a vegetarian, and therefore Garuda eats snakes and fish and such things. So once Garuda came there to the Yamuna, and Garuda ate the leader of all the fish, a very big fish who was the king of the fish. So Subari Muni, who had been sitting there so long and knew everything about the underwater kingdom, was extremely upset that Garuda ate this fish, and therefore he cursed him. He cursed him that if he would ever come again in the Yamuna, he would die. And his curse was invested with power due to his austerity. But at the same time, although the curse worked, Garuda could not come to the Yamuna, still, nonetheless, Subari Muni committed an offense by disrespecting the carrier of the Lord. And as a result, the lusty desires that were latent within his heart were again coming to the surface. And then, of course, he had such a strong desire to enjoy and approached the king for the hand of his daughter, which was a great shock to the king. He didn't know what to do because he was afraid that the Muni might curse him, and at the same time he was also afraid that his daughter might be totally unhappy being married to an old yogi who still was sort of, well, it's described here, wrinkled, the skin was slack, the head was always shaking, and an old man, a really old man. But then Sarari, by mystic power, transformed himself, and then all the princesses wanted to marry him. He had 50 wives, which is quite a number. And we can see that there was no peace amongst them. There was intense competition. Anyway, the point is that Subari, due to offenses, material desire was awakened. And that is an important point, I think, maybe one of the most important points in the whole narration, that a great yogi who was able to control his senses for a long, long time was not able to continue to do so for two reasons. One is he was not absorbed exclusively in devotional service to Krishna. And when one is not exclusively absorbed in devotional service to Krishna, then one is still involved to some extent in sense gratification. It may not be gross, it may be subtle sense gratification, the desire for profit distinction and adoration, but nonetheless, the desire for sense gratification remains. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakala, ashanti. Even these yogis who are striving for mystic perfections are never peaceful. They are always under the influence of desire for sense gratification. Whereas the devotee, the unalloyed devotee, gives up all desires for personal sense gratification and simply gets interested in satisfying the senses of the Lord. First, systematically, in a process of practice, or sadhana bhakti, first trying to, by following rules and regulations, to engage the senses systematically in the service of the Lord, and then spontaneously attracted to satisfying the Lord. Because Krishna is Bhagavan, and Jiva Goswami gives that definition of the word Bhagavan, which is Bhajaniya Guna Visishta. He says there's three syllables, Bhagava, and that stands for Bhajaniya Guna Visishta. That his qualities are so amazing that you have to worship him. He's irresistible. You have to worship him. So this is nice. Therefore, by serving Krishna, automatically the desire to serve Krishna will increase. And that is an important point for us, because it is not difficult to become Krishna conscious. It is not difficult to come to the stage of spontaneous devotional service. It is simply, it comes simply from serving Krishna. The more we are absorbed in serving Krishna, the more the desire to serve Krishna will come. The material energy always is there, and is also testing us, and also trying to attract our mind. But if we are always engaged in devotional service, then there is no room for the material influence. Daivyesa gunamayi mama maya gurachayama neviye papadante mayamitam talantite. Maybe great pure devotees can be absorbed in samadhi. If Sabari Muni would have been a great devotee of Krishna, a pure devotee of Krishna, he could have sat underwater and just meditate on Krishna, and that would have been sufficient as devotional service. But because he was not such a devotee, he fell down. In our case, we may also not be such devotees. It may be very difficult to focus the mind on Krishna very long, and after a short time we become restless. Chanchanima Krishna, this restlessness is a big problem that we're facing, because whatever we do, after a little while the restless mind wants to do something else. And there is something called bhog and chak, and the dynamics of bhog and chak. And it means that we desire one thing, And when we attain it, then we don't care about it anymore. And then we want to give it up. And up and down. And then when we give it up, then we want it again. And then when we have it, we want to give it up. And like this, we are going up and down, up and down. And that is our whole life. So in every situation we are, we always think of another one. Always. Constantly. Never satisfied in the situation where we are. And therefore, yeah, always dreaming of something else. But when we attain that, then still not satisfied. And again, dreaming of something else. So this is Chanchala Nimana Krishna, the restlessness of the mind. So that is the beginning stage of devotional service. And therefore, with the intelligence, one has to fix himself in a process, in a program. At that stage, one is not strong. It is said, Balavan indriyan gramo vidvansam apikarasati. The senses are so strong that even a man of learning is struggling. Even if one has knowledge, one is still struggling because the senses are very, very strong. Therefore, in the beginning stages, a process of meditation is not recommended. Maybe devotees in advanced stages of bhava could do so if they so desired. But devotees who are less advanced and who still have so many impurities within the heart and whose mind is absorbed in the pushings of the senses, they must engage the senses, the very same senses, in the service of Krishna. So it is interesting that the senses, as it is said, our favorite song, Sarira Vijajaya Vimriya Teka Dimude Sai Sankhe Tarnaji Jivayati. The senses are a network of paths leading to death. We sing it very happily every day. And I'm not sure that everyone knows the translation. But the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Yes. So this is the case. But when these same senses become engaged in the service of the Lord, then they become the path to liberation. Therefore the acharyas are sometimes saying, may the Lord always remain on the pathway of my eyes. So in this way, that pathway is described. The path of spiritual life. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Durgame Patimendasya Skala Padakati Muhu Yakripa Swastidani Santa Santa Lambanam. It said, my path is very difficult and my feet are slipping again and again. But by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, as a stick for my support, I can stay on the path. So with time we come to that. With time we come to that. Maybe in the beginning we think, I can do it. I can do it. I am advancing very quickly. But then, not so quickly after all. Still some material desires may remain in our heart. In so many ways, we are similar to Subari Muni. We are not unalloyed devotees. There is still dormant desire in the heart, and sometimes not so dormant. Sometimes quite present, and we are struggling and fighting to overcome material desire. Of course, the chanting of Hare Krishna is the principal means of devotional service. But because of this restlessness of the mind, we are not able to chant very long. Not able. Even if we are very determined by nature, and we can temporarily chant huge numbers of rounds. Huge numbers of rounds chanted on determination can also not be maintained. Only huge numbers of rounds can only be maintained on the strength of love. It struck me like that when we went to Benapol. Benapol is in Bangladesh, and it is just on the border with India. It's actually very close to Mayapur. If one has a visa, one can easily go to Benapol, just from Chakta, which is in between Mayapur, 60 kilometers from Chakta, between Mayapur and Calcutta, and very nice. So when we went there, to that place, I had sort of, in my mind, prepared for a place dedicated to Haridas Thakur, the place where he chanted 300,000 names, and I was thinking, and we'll go there to chant Hare Krishna. When we came there, there was not only a deity of Haridas, but there was also a deity of Laksahira, the prostitute. Yeah. So like full-size deity of the prostitute. So, all right, there's a deity of the prostitute. So there was actually a lot of, by just seeing that deity, it sort of created a bit more meditation on the prostitute than I had imagined beforehand. And I started to think, yes, it is amazing, because this prostitute was the emblem of lust. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is described that the prostitute was told by Ramachandra Khan, go and seduce this young Haridas, and I'll send my constable with you, and when you have union with him, then I will arrest him. She said, no, don't send your constable. Let me first enjoy with him one night, and then the next day you can send your constable. So she had more than professional interest. She had also some personal interest in this beautiful young sadhu. So, therefore, one could say she was an emblem of lust. But somehow or other, by Haridas's association, she was so much uplifted that she was able to overcome that lust and also take up chanting 300,000 names every day. Therefore, I had thought, when I go there, I'm going to pray to chant for the power to chant. But when I prayed, when I got there, I prayed to overcome lust. And actually, I mean, I realized actually, here in this place, by the mercy of Haridas, lust was overcome. if only I could get that blessing, then it will be easy. Then it will be easy, much easier, to chant all the time. Chant chalamimala Krishna, because it is lust that causes this restlessness. It is the desire. Admendriya prithivam chitara bodhika. It is the desire to enjoy one's own senses. That is the problem. Instead of Krishnendriya prithivam chitara bodhika. So, all right, now in practice, let us become Krishnendriya. And let us somehow or other satisfy the senses of Krishna as much as possible. Therefore, we see that Srila Prabhupada based his movement on service, on practical service, and not on chanting the whole day, but on service. And not only on just Payena Deva Muniyo Swami Muktikam. Not only on practicing for our own salvation, but
with that desire, as Prahlad Maharaj showed, to do something for the conditioned souls. That is the way. Because if we are just engaged in devotional service with an aim to become purified and to make advancement and to overcome material desires, it will be very difficult. It will be very hard. But when we become absorbed in somehow or other giving, somehow thinking of others and their situation, and particularly others like us. I like that in the Chaitanya Bhagavat there is that story how Nityananda had received all these jewels from his very wealthy disciple. And Nityananda was roaming around Bengal like that, and some dacoits, they saw all these this opulence, and they thought, this man is worth a fortune. And if we would only have these jewels. So they followed him. And they tried on different occasions to find an opportunity to steal the jewels. And just on a dark moon night, they were ready. And Nityananda was staying in some house somewhere. And they were going to attack that house and take all the jewels. When suddenly there were huge soldiers walking around the house. So they retreated. The leader of the dacoits said that, well, the king that gave them the jewels must have also given them the soldiers, but sooner or later they have to go back to the king. So just wait. So they were following each other. They were waiting. They tried again another night, and somehow or other they fell asleep that night. Anyway, they tried a third time, and the third time they all became blind and fell in ditches and broke bones and scratched themselves and injured themselves. Then the leader of the dacoits, who was actually from a Brahminical birth, he came to his senses. He said, this is not ordinary. This Nityananda is not an ordinary man. How is this possible? It happens again and again. It looks as if it is by divine arrangement. And as he was thinking that, it dawned upon him. Nityananda is a divine personality. He's not an ordinary personality. He is the Supreme Lord. And he went to the Lord, and suddenly this very fearsome dacoit, everyone knew this very big gunda, he came. And he just came before Nityananda. So the whole assembly of devotees was, oh, this man is coming here. And everyone felt the tension when he came in the room. And then he just fell flat, paid his obeisances before Nityananda, full flat. And just asked him to forgive him for all the sinful activities and please accept him. So Nityananda accepted him. And then later, that dacoit, he left again, but he would sometimes come into the assembly of Nityananda, and he would bring different, like, criminals, dacoits that you can see, you know, these heavy dudes, and he would bring such kind of people to Nityananda and make them bow down before Nityananda, right? And also accept. So, it is very interesting that, yes, one can do something for people that are like us, that are just like us, because we can relate to them, we can feel for them, it's hard to feel compassionate, but everyone feels some compassion for himself, and it's easier to feel compassion for people who are like us, who are in the same boat that we used to be in. One can identify with it and think, yes, I was like that. Yeah. And there we are at our best. Yeah. So it's easy. Just bring the people who are now where we were before. And we know them inside out. We know everything about them. It's so easy. We can bring them like that. One can so easily do something to connect to others. And that is the most powerful service, because that has the blessings in this age of Lord Chaitanya. And only with those blessings can we, the residents of Kali, overcome these material desires that are otherwise so strong and otherwise so easily we can fall down and actually we act like, sometimes we act like fall down is something shocking and something shameful and something exceptional. But the truth of the matter is that it's very common. And I have sometimes mentioned that when there is a leader in our movement who has some personal difficulty, he falls down with firecrackers. You know what I'm saying? Everyone is noticing. But then there is another fall down, which is the silent fall down. And the silent fall down is very common. It is everywhere. It is. So many devotees may fall down and no one will never know, except from the moroseness on the faces, except from the lack of happiness and the lack of effulgence. Otherwise, it will never come out officially. So this, the point is that I'm trying to make with this is that it's not easy. It's not easy in this age. It's not easy for us. We need the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is no doubt about it. So, therefore, we need to do something to attract that mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which means we'll have to somehow or other make an attempt to deliver the conditioned souls. Otherwise, it will not. But also, we have to have strong discipline in our personal life, in our personal sadhana, so that we have the strength. Otherwise, just preaching alone, we will not survive. It must be both. Therefore, the Bhagavad Vidhi and the Pancharatriki Vidhi, two tracks. One track is our sadhana spiritual practice, the other track, the distribution of the mercy. So I'll end with that. Any questions? Any comments?
Imagine the services and chanting, and it's all absolute, with the ultimate aim is to please Krishna. So, why does it matter what proportion of that you do? Why couldn't one just do service or just read? It's all absolute.
Yeah, it's all absolute. But it's not a mechanical process. It's all the activity that we are engaging in is transcendental. Still, by making special endeavors, one can attract special mercy. And the thing that attracts the Lord the most, the idea is that we engage in service to attract Krishna's mercy. And the thing that attracts the Lord the most is when we are not only concerned with our own benefit, but also with the benefit of others. So that's where one can get mercy very quickly. So therefore, although all service is absolute, it doesn't mean that it all attracts equal mercy of the Lord. And because it is the age of Kali, and because this is the particular one where Lord Chaitanya appeared, and the Lord himself has such a desire to deliver the conditioned souls, it's obvious that it's that anyone who seriously starts to assist the Lord in that he is Priyakritama, that he is most dear to her. Therefore, preaching must be there. And without it, but because we are so fallen, if we don't get absorbed in that Sankirtan spirit, we may still remain very self-centered. And if we're self-centered, then the desire for self-aggrandizement, for our own glories, will remain, which is a subtle form of sex desire, pratistha. But this pratistha is very difficult. The desire to for recognition, is very difficult. Very difficult to do. Very subtle. Very hard to overcome. But if we just work hard and take austerities on preaching, then, and in other services, then eventually we can overcome. And time, and with time, Krishna arranges life in such a way that this pratistha gets dealt with. Because you're a kid, and you're always hankering, if only I was old enough, if only, no, I can do it myself. And finally you get your chance. And then you're at the peak of your glory, and then you start to lose it all. And you have to witness that, how you lose your power. And that's painful. It's painful. You lose your glory. And life is set up like that. It's painful to get old and to see that you're losing it. And you're very much aware of it. So it's painful. So in this way, gradually, Purnamusi Kebab, be a mouse again. That story of being a mouse again. So life is about Purnamusi Kebab, about becoming a mouse again. Everyone in life is, growing up to the point of being a tiger, right? And then again becomes a mouse. Time is doing. So this pratistha is difficult. But if we start to think more and more of others, and get really busy with that, it will help.
Sometimes I find, Marsh, that getting the balance between investing energy in the preaching mission and getting that strong discipline is really difficult to manage.
Balance is always difficult, because balance is never one position. Balance means you have to always adjust. The circumstances are constantly changing. It's not that they fix. So balance means you have to be awake and just make adjustments to keep to balance. So sometimes a little bit on the sadhana side, sometimes a little more on the preaching side. So the difficult part of being balanced is that you can't sleep and go on automatic pilot. And say, well, now I've put everything in balance. And then you wake up after, oh my God, everything got out of hand. No. So we have to stay awake and make adjustments. Balance is very hard. The circumstances always throw us off balance. All the time. Constantly. So balance is something you have to look for again and again. A little bit more of this, a little less of that. Okay. Constantly. Tough to be balanced. Would you like to?
No. But you're right, that's just the problem. The balance is a problem. That's everybody's problem. The balance between sadhana and preaching.
Nobody's got it figured out. Can't. Some people may be okay. Appear to be more balanced than others, but they also struggle. looks like. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada.